The documents are supposedly now housed in the Shrine of the Book in Israel. This building was especially built for the study and translation of the scrolls, and to act as a depository to facilitate the piecing together of the countless fragments. I know the information in this book could not have come from the minds of anyone involved in the experiment because the information was too obscure. But now I am convinced that it could not have come from the minds of anyone living today. I believe we have uncovered a more complete picture of this wonderful group of people than has ever been presented before. If there were ever an attempt to wipe an entire group of people off the face of the map, that was what happened with the Essenes. There is no mention of them in the Bible. It has been inferred that all references of them have been deliberately deleted, because of the similarity between their doctrine and Christianity. If it had not been for a few diligent writers and historians who lived at the beginning of the Christian era, we would have no knowledge of the Essenes at all. These ancient authors were Philo, a Jewish Alexandrian philosopher, Pliny, a Roman writer, and Josephus, a Jewish warrior and historian. I went to the source and read the translations of their works. I shall refer to them at times throughout this book. Philo is said to have lived between 20 BC and 60 AD, so he would have been alive during the time period that our story covers. But his accounts are said to have been written from hearsay. He was not personally acquainted with the Essenes or their community. This might explain any discrepancies between his account and Josephus. Pliny lived from about 23 AD to 79 AD, and wrote only a small amount concerning the Essenes. Josephus is considered to be the most reliable source and is the most quoted. He was born in Jerusalem about 37 AD, and actually lived within the community and had first-hand knowledge of them during their latter days. But it is said that he tended to color his Jesus and the Essenes report to make it harmonize with the systems of Greek philosophy popular at his time. He lived and wrote from a later time period than the life of Suddy. Yet these histories verify the incredible amount of accuracy we uncovered in our experiment. The descriptions of lifestyle and beliefs dovetail very well. These are the only known written records about the mysterious Essenes. These authors only mentioned that the strange Kamasoft-Nitti was located in the Dead Sea area. Archaeologists never knew exactly where and had never tried to find Qumran. The terrible climate of the area is a scientist's nightmare and they had no desire to hunt for it without a specific reason. After the destruction of Qumran by the campaigning Roman armies in 68 AD, the ruins sat atop the salt cliffs by the Dead Sea for almost 2,000 years. Crumbling in desolate silence, they went virtually unnoticed. The men who had devoted their lives to the accumulation and preservation of knowledge seemed to Kamasoft-Nitti disappear beneath the relentless sun and the shifting sands of the desert. It was as if they had never existed. Although the ruins stood as silent reminder of the great minds that once flourished there, they were not recognized for what they were. For ages people thought they were merely the remnants of one of the many Roman garrisons that sprang up after the invasion. Surely nothing of any importance could have flourished in such a god-forsaken spot. The ruins were ignored completely until the discovery of the first Dead Sea Scrolls in 1947. The caves in the salt cliffs had held tightly to their secrets for 2,000 years. Then faith took a hand and led the Bedouin shepherd boy, searching for his lost goat, to the discovery of the hidden scrolls in jars in a cave. The story of this exciting find has been told and retold. It is certain that much was probably lost or inadvertently destroyed before the enormity of the discovery was made known to the outside world and the scientists descended on the desert. With the help of the native Arabs, more and more scrolls and tens of thousands of fragments were uncovered from neighboring caves. What was at first believed to be an isolated lucky find was soon being heralded as the greatest discovery in the history of mankind. As more caves yielded up their hidden treasure of knowledge, archaeologists began to wonder how such an accumulation came to be hidden in the desert. Only then did they begin to look who were the Essenes, questioningly at the nearby ruins. Maybe it was something more than just an army garrison, maybe there was some connection. The first excavations in the winter of 1951 turned up nothing to support the theory. but during 1952 it was proven conclusively that the scrolls had originally come from whoever had lived in the ruins. Then the writings of Philo, Pliny and Josephus began to shed light on who the occupants might have been. Everything finally fell into place and Qumran was declared the home of the secretive, communisticians. The word communistic has come to take on a very different meaning in our world today, and some questions have arisen over my using this word to describe this ancient group. The Essens were considered communistic in the purest sense of the word. They lived together in a community, sharing everything and needing no money. All that is known today about these people has come from the ancient writings and what the archaeologists found in 3 years of digging. There are many gaps and questions. Maybe our experiment will help supply answers. Chapter 5, Description of Qumran. The archaeologists believed the group living at Qumran was a religious order of men similar to monks, secluded from a world they could not identify with. They believed the Essens lived by a strict code of discipline and rigid rules. I shall attempt to show that many of the scientists' ideas of these wonderful people are incorrect, according to the information received through Katie while she was in deep trance. I have compiled all of the information gathered about the community of Qumran and will present it in one chapter, although it actually was scattered throughout the many sessions. Katie often repeated the same descriptions, but she never contradicted herself. I believe the picture that emerged through the eyes of Sudi is much more human than the one revealed by the scientists' shovels. I felt that in order to understand this person I had uncovered, I had to know more about the place where he lived and his way of life. Especially since this would also reflect the conditions under which Jesus lived during the most vulnerable part of his life. When I talked with Sudi as a child, he called the place a community. He never called it anything else. He did not understand the word town or village and did not know of any other place but Qumran. This is also what the archaeologists have called it, and they say it was not a city. In his description, Sudi said, "It is not very large, but it is a place where there are many people. There are the libraries, the houses and the temple. We are in the hills and we overlook the sea. The buildings are of clay. They are made of bricks and they have flat roofs and everything is built together." He said most of the walls joined each other. I was confused when he said the community was enclosed by a wall that had six sides. It sounded strange, but the odd thing is that when you look at the drawing of the archaeologists' excavations, you can see it is definitely not square. It may be debated whether raw plan of Qumran 35 Osat 21 if on Rumkvkonum 3 NRVW for LACI War 5 GS RAMR 21 Uraci, WW 2 Z Sir, 9I8 24 Car 4 11 and carat percent 40 watts comma p. Ezol PM 114 Varim Moopt underscore dot underscore are Jesus and the Essens not it is a six-sided shape, because it is not a geometrical six-sided figure. It is also apparent from the drawing that the rooms mostly all connect. Most are built with common walls. At times when I talked with Sudi as a child he was playing in a courtyard. When he was older, he also liked to sit and meditate in one of these. He said there were several courtyards within the community. I am accustomed to a courtyard being in the center of something, but these were scattered throughout. He said the study and library were in the very center, where everyone gathered for the classes. The papyri, or scrolls, were also stored there. In one of the courtyards there were fountains, in others there were gardens, not gardens as I would have assumed, but beautiful flower gardens. They are the colors of the rainbow. They are like many jewels that sparkle. I wondered how they were able to grow flowers in such a hot place. I didn't think much of anything would grow in the desert. He objected, "Oh, but they do. Flowers grow in the desert, as long as there is rain. As long as there is water the heat does not matter. When the rains come in the spring, that the desert is all abloom. For the seeds that have been dropped will suddenly burst forth into flower. The desert can be very beautiful." In the courtyard located near the eating areas there were fruit trees. There are the trees that they grow up, fair figs, dates, pomegranate soft hyphen et, orange and lemon. It's almost as if they touch the sky. And there are pathways that you can walk among them, or you may sit among the flowers. By again referring to the drawing, it can be seen that there are indeed several courtyards. In all the diagrams, however, the archaeologists have pictured the courtyards as being barren. They thought little would grow in the Qumran area because of the scarcity of water. They knew grains were grown because they had excavated around a spring known as Ain Feshka, which was located 2 miles to the south. They thought this was the Essen's agricultural area, and concluded that the isolated people subsisted on this cultivation and the keeping of bees, etc., eating only meager, monotonous food. But the ancient writers disagree with this. Pliny mentioned that the Essens lived among palm trees. Solinus said, palm berries are their food, apparently referring to dates. This was thought to be a mistake until the archaeologists dug up remains of date palms and date seeds. It seems Suddy was description of Qumran correct about trees growing in Qumran. Suddy said that the majority of the Essens did not live within the community walls. There was housing for the families further up the hill to the north, outside the main complex. These houses apparently had the same building arrangement as the community, the joining together of buildings with common walls. The archaeologists believe the people lived in caves and tents, which seems strange to me. Why would they build such a beautifully efficient community and then go and live under primitive conditions? As far as I have been able to find out, I do not believe many excavations have been performed in the area away from the walls. Their reports mention only digging in the main complex and exhuming some of the graves in the adjoining cemetery. Incidents of Tali. The scientists still believed there was only a brotherhood of monks living in Qumran until they found the skeletons of women and children in the cemetery. They had to quickly revise their thinking, for it was apparent that families lived there. Suddy's family lived farther up the hill than most. He could look out of the house and see across the Dead Sea for a long distance. The only people who lived within the community itself were the priests of Yahweh who took care of the temple, the scrolls and kept the fires lit. Suddy lived with his mother, father and sister Sara. I asked for a description of the living quarters. When the weather was hot they would sleep out on the flat roof. When it was cooler he shared a room with his sister. There was a room which was considered the family room, where the meals were cooked. His parents had their own bedroom, and there was another room where his father studied, which was full of many papyri. The quarters shared common walls with the other families. The archaeologists have assumed from the ruins that everyone always ate together in the large dining hall within the community complex. But Suddy said the families mostly ate in their own quarters. If there were great occasions when someone would come to speak, then they would go to the main dining hall. The Essens believed there would be less conflict if everyone had an area that was their own. The library and the dining hall were both large rectangular rooms. Covered openings in the roofs allowed the light to enter. There were also openings in the walls which were covered to keep Jesus and the Essens the sand out. He was not sure which was the largest building because he had not stepped them off. The most common way of entering the community from the outside was through a gateway next to the high cliff. It was large enough to take a caravan through if need be. When I asked if there were any other ways of coming in, he acknowledged cautiously that there were, but would offer no further information. This was apparently one of the many subjects that I was to find he was not allowed to talk about. The Essens were extremely secretive in many respects and I was to have difficulty breaking through this defensive barrier. He said there were several buildings that had more than a single story. The library had a second floor. The assembly hall, dining hall, had the height for 2 floors but there was only the tall ceiling. He said the tower near the gate had 3 floors. The archaeologists mentioned there was evidence that some of the rooms had 2 floors. They said the tower had 2 stories. But they also mention a basement for storage, which would be the equivalent of 3. The purpose of the tower was mostly for observation. From this vantage point the Essens could see anyone approaching the community. Suddy mentioned it was also used for protection, but when I asked him to elaborate he refused to answer. This was another forbidden subject. When he grew older, he no longer lived with his parents in the housing but had moved to a part reserved for unmarried young adults. Here the men and women lived in what he called a part soft-mense, although he wasn't sure of that word. where they had their meals was an individual preference. While living in these quarters, he often ate with the others for companionship and conversation. There were many tables in the dining room or hall of meals, but the cooking was done in rooms off the hall or outside in clay ovens. The scientists have said that the Essens all ate together in the dining hall while solemnly observing ceremonies or rituals that went on while they were eating. Suddy disagreed. He said there was only the blessing, and that no teaching or anything else was done while the meal was in progress. It was also believed that they observed strict religious rituals during the day. Again Suddy disagreed, saying nothing was mandatory. It was left up to the description of Qumran individual. For the most part any religious observances were on a Sabbath. If the people wished to eat in their own quarters they would go to one of the keepers of the stores and take what they would need. They would not go hungry, but there would be no gluttony allowed. I was curious about the types of food that would be eaten. Millet was a main staple. This was a type of grain that was raised outside probably at Ain Feshka. After it was harvested, the grains were winnowed and stored in great sacks. He described a dish made from millet. To prepare it you would take a handful and a pot of boiling water and throw it in with a little salt. Sometimes herbs were added. It sounded like a soup, but he said you could roll it and eat it with your hands, so it may have been some kind of bread. Different types of meat were eaten, lamb and goat, occasionally an ox or a young bullock and different types of birds. Aramim soft-bared the food laws in the Old Testament and asked about any restrictions. He said, you may not partake of swine or anything that the hoof has been uncloven. The swine, it eats anything. It would eat dung if this is what it is fed, it would not matter. Therefore it is considered unclean. You may eat only those with the cloven hoof that chew the cud. The camel chews the cud but we do not eat the camel. He personally did not like to eat meat although there was no strict rule forbidding those in the community to do so. It was his personal choice. It is not good to kill something for your own. Just. For enjoyment. This is God's creature you are destroying. To eat meat is to tie one here, to tie one's soul to the earth. He did not understand the word beverages, but they drank wine, water and sometimes the milk of different animals. As a trick I asked about coffee, but he said, I do not know this. This is not familiar to me. I have had these thatar madi from mints and different types of leaves. Vegetables was another word he did not understand even after much explanation. Other things were eaten besides the grain and fruit, but these were bought from passing caravans. He described the furniture in the living quarters. There are the bed, frames that have ropes that are crisscrossed, in which to make a frame. And then the padding and all is put on top of this. And this is how you sleep, on this. There are chairs and tables. If you wish to sit or relax, take a cushion and sit on their floor. It is again preference. The frame of Jesus and the Essens the bed was about a foot high. He did not understand what I meant when I asked about blankets or covers. When I explained, he answered, there is no reason to have these blankets. It would be too much. If you lived in the mountains, perhaps you would need them. He also didn't know what a pillow was. But since he had used the word cushion I knew he would recognize that word. He could not understand why we would want to put a cushion under the head while sleeping. The head is not elevated. The ideal way of sleeping is to have the feet higher than the head, to aid in circulation. To elevate the head, then you would have problems with your feet swelling. You do not? To elevate the head would be to bring about headaches and many other problems. To elevate the feet would aid in the circulation of the body and stop it settling down. They would either put a cushion beneath the feet or tilt the bed. The only other furnishings in the house were shelves that you could put things on, such as clothing and things of that nature. I asked about decorations and he frowned, confused again. I was thinking about pictures or statues. The word statues disturbed him. We do not have statues. There are not statues made. We would occasionally have a painting. But there are no statues allowed in the community. It is to copy what God has made. It is not allowed in the commandments to make of a graven image, even if it wasn't meant to be a god. For instance, a statue of an animal. Many false gods are worshipped as animals. I tried to explain that some people like to have statues and paintings in their houses just because they were beautiful to look at. They did not intend them to be used in worship. But Sadi couldn't understand this concept. I would look at Naturi and find the beauty in this. Why look at a rough imitation when the real thing is before you? I can understand beauty and the need to create, but could you not create many things far greater? The paintings are very beautiful. When I asked for an explanation of the paintings, I was not expecting the type he was familiar with. They were painted on papyri or wood and hung about the house, but they were not pictures of objects or living things such as we would have. They sounded more like some type of abstract painting. S. Colors, and the way the lights and shapes and I do not paint. I am not explaining this very well. They are things that speak to the soul. They err from within, rather than what the eyes would see. Description of Qumran 45. They are what the soul sees. They would have meaning only to the one that paints them. D. What about the Romans? They have many statues, don't they? S. Yes, but they are heathens. They worship them. They have them having qualities that are not there. They are a just stone. D. Do they actually worship the statue itself, or do they worship an idea behind it? S. There are all differences. Some of them worship the statue as real, others say that it is just what it represents. Either covenant seems to be very dangerous ideas. He was very shocked when I asked if he had ever been inside a Roman temple. I have spoken with Romans about their beliefs, but in their temples they slay animals and defile the name of worship. It has become something afar and unclean. There is one in Bethesda, this is the only one I know of. I have heard of the one in Jerusalem and different ones. Cape Normies say to have one. Of course, Tiberias is a temple. This was built by their emperor. Tiberias was pronounced fast and the syllables slurred together. I asked about Nazareth, but he said the village was too small, they would not bother to put one there. I thought he might have wanted to see one out of curiosity, but the idea was repulsive to him. Our temple starts from within. If there is a wholeness from within, it spreads without. You need no house or chamber to hold it. I have always thought that the temple and the synagogue were the same place with different names. I remembered the story of Jesus in the Bible when he was found in the temple teaching the doctors. S. A temple is only for the worship of Elohim, but the synagogue is also a place of teaching. The temple, it has the Holy of Holies, where in the synagogue, perhaps, they only have the sanctum for the Torah. The temple is to God, the synagogue is for the worship in the manner of Jewish faith. D. So any person practicing another religion could come into the temple, but not into the synagogue. S. Yes. In the synagogue there is a place for the Gentiles or also a women's court. And in the temple all are allowed to worship God. Although the Bible mentioned Jesus questioning the doctors, Sadi did not know that word. What he considered a healer was Jesus and the essence called a physician, and this type of person would only teach his specialty. They would not teach in the temple. Apparently what is meant in the Bible is someone like a teacher who is very learned, perhaps a master. S. Those who would teach in the temple are the teachers of law. There are priests, each has their own specialty. Like one would have law, and another would have the mysteries and others would be speaking of the different knowledge that has been passed on down. A rabbi would be different, he teaches Jewish law and Jewish religion, as it were. I asked for a description of the temple at Qumran and got more than I bargained for. S. There is the area where the people would gather. They would kneel or sit on their floor. And then there is the altar. Behind the altar is the curtain, the inner sanctum which has the veil across. And inside there the Torah and the scrolls are kept, Kabbal. During the studies or celebrations of holy days, whatever is occurring, they would bring this forth and read off them and share. There would be the sharing of souls, then discussion of dealings of God and life and many things. In the synagogue the women are not allowed except in the women's court. Here all are allowed. D. Are there any religious objects in the temple, for instance, on the altar? S. There is the cup and usually an incense burner, this is truly all. D. What purpose does the cup have? What is the significance of it? S. It is the passing between all and sharing in this manner. It bonds us together and makes us one. There was an unexpected familiarity about this. Harriet Ixit soft hyphen Edley asked, everyone drinks from the same cup? What do they drink, water? There is usually wine. This was a significant new development. What Suddy was describing sounded like Holy Communion or Lord's Supper. But this is supposed to be con soft hyphen nectar with Christ and he was not yet born. Suddy said no food was passed at this time. I was thinking about the bread or wafer in communion, only the cup was passed around among the people. Description of Qumran S. It is the cup of life blood. It is the sharing of life between all. The wine represents the blood of all and the sharing together. D. This is the significance? It means that everyone is of one blood? Are only those members of the Essene community allowed to partake of the cup? S. One must have accepted precepts to be able to share of the oneness. Partly due to the fact that they would perhaps not understand what is the point that is trying to be brought with this. It is not that we do not believe that they are one with us, because we do. It's just that the sharing is brought about in their own time. If they are not ready for it, it is not stressed. Thus a stranger passing through would not be allowed to participate in this. This ritual was performed at ceremonies where everyone would be together and able to attend. It was done on the Sabbath but was not restricted to the day. Suddy said that to his knowledge this ceremony was not performed by the Jewish community at large. I felt this was an important discovery. Apparently when Jesus performed the Last Supper with his disciples in the upper room he was not instituting a new ritual. He was using one he had participated in many times with the Essenes. The symbolism of the bread is said to be a Jewish custom. I think what he did was combine this with the custom of passing the cup and gave it a new meaning. To the Essenes this ceremony symbolized that they were all of one blood and the sharing of life between all. What could be more natural than Jesus wanting to perform this on the eve of his trials and eventual death? It was to be one last show of brotherhood between himself and his followers. Sandalwood was burned in the incense burner, because it is said that it can help open some of the centers, chakras, within ourself. Again, I am not familiar with the teachings of all of the mysteries and the ceremonies. Whereas the passing of the cup was strictly a rite of the Essenes, other religions did use the incense, even the Romans. It occurred to me that if they had one type of ritual that was familiar to the Christian church, they might have another one. I took a chance and asked about baptism. Suddy seemed confused, puzzled, because he was not familiar with that word. D. It's a washing, a ceremonial cleansing with water. Jesus and the Essenes, there is a ceremony of cleansing. After a person has had his bar mitzvah, they are taken out and they have to be considered to reach the age of consent. And they choose to follow the path of Yahweh or perhaps to fall off. If they choose to follow this, they are cleansed in the waters. And it is said that they are washing away their past and from this point they shall start new. There are different ways of doing it. Some pour the water over and some make them lie down in, upon the water. D. Would you go down to the Dead Sea to do this? S. No, no one would go into the Sea of Death. It is usually done in one of the fountains here. D. Are there any special clothes that you would wear at that time? S. Either a robe made out of flax or none at all. It is part of the purification, the stripping bare of the soul. D. Does the priest perform the ceremony? S. Yes, or an elder. Usually this is only done once in a person's life. This would explain where John the Baptist got the idea for the ritual of baptism. When he was baptizing people in the Jordan River, it was nothing new. He was merely following an existing custom of the Essenes. The translators of the Dead Sea Scrolls are aware of this coincidence. I found that there are numerous references to these two ceremonies in the scrolls. Many of these experts have come to the conclusion that this directly ties John the Baptist to the Essenes. It indicates that he was under their influence at some time in his life. The Essenes dressed quite simply. Both men and women wore a plain robe made either of sheep's hair that was spun and woven, wool, or of flaxen that had been processed, linen. The robes were gathered at the waist and touched the floor. They were considered to be cool. Underneath the robes the men wore a breech cloth. Both sexes wore sandals. The robes were always white, although sometimes it was more of the color of the rich cream of the cows. "'Tis not quite white. It rarely got cool enough to wear anything else, but if it did, they had cloaks of various colors. The adult males wore a beard,